Hi, I'm David Smith.
This is Samuel Petreski.
Sorry.
Gonna say your name there. I work at Georgetown University. I also run my own digital forensics company. And I'll look at Sam get in. Everything's in the guide. Just read it there.
Samuel Petreski, work for Georgetown University as well. I run my own consulting company, mostly in network security architecture. So I design big stuff that would fit in the enterprise. And we're going to talk to you about forensic methodology here. So the idea is that.
So anyway, I came up with this idea. I was actually reading a white paper, and it was a fantastic white paper, and I definitely recommend you go and take a look at it. I put the important things up on the screen, but it compared a lot of digital forensic methodologies, broke them up into like a standard phases and which ones have which, and it's just kind of that normal go and collect it and make sure you have your warrants and all those types of things. But it did a really good job of just saying, hey, there's so many out there, you know, what's missing? And so a lot of the methodologies, I thought none of them out there really were what I taught. I run teams of forensics folks, and, you know, I'm always like getting a new guy and, you know, having a good guy that's learned a lot of good things head off to his own organization or start his own company. And so I found myself in the same little groove of like, here's what I want you to do, and here's how I break it down for you. So I wanted to actually, this was the idea I had, and just, you know, why not take all of these processes and turn them into a real methodology? And I did really in my head say, okay, what's the really difference between a methodology and a process? And so I broke it up. And so what I think I really have is a methodology.
So to start off, we're going to look at some of the existing methodologies and how they compare and kind of look at what's really good at them. And then we're going to kind of try to show you where our methodology really fits into. So this is the first paper where the idea came from, where Dave was talking about initially. This is a really good overview paper. So if you want to find out what kind of methodologies are out there, how they propose that the forensic work works, they analyzed about 13 different papers. It's a little bit older now. I think it was published in 2008. But they looked at 13 different methodologies, and they found that different methodologies had different number of phases. Some of them had 4 phases, and some of them, I think, had 21 phases. And so what they did is they grouped everything in 5 common phases on the right-hand side, as you can see there. And then they mapped the existing phases that the methodology had into their 4 or 5 phases here and see where they would fit in. And so the conclusion of the analysis paper was really most of the methodologies out there would fit within the 4 phases. Most of them fit into the 5 phases of their proposed model. But in essence, all the methodologies have the main components there.
Who's a Brian Carrier fan? Okay.
All right. Cool. So, as I mentioned, the different things that what we found is the different methodologies have the same main components. Basically, how do you authorize the investigation? You know, do you get the right data? How do you acquire the images the proper way? Have it so it's admitted in court later on if you need to. Then how do you define the valid technologies or techniques to find the data that you're really after it? And then at the end, how do you produce a report that's really meaningful to the requester and shows that the information that they requested really is there or it's not there? So quick show of hands, how many of you are just getting into forensics, like just getting there? Excellent. How many of you just do forensics kind of regular basis, medium level kind of? And how many of you are experts, do this in and out all day long? Okay. Excellent. So I think our presentation here is mostly going to focus on the beginner and the intermediate level of people that know what to do with forensics and show them some tools and methodologies, what they can use there. And then from the experts, we really want their input because at the end of the day, really this whole methodology is how an expert digital forensic analyst has the conversation within their head when they're analyzing a methodology or when they're performing a forensic job. So we really want to kind of pick their minds, get the information from them, and then have that information available for everyone to be able to go through the process. And at the end of the day, we should all be able to produce the same type of result. So couple other methodologies that we looked at, really what's the digital forensic methodology. The Department of Justice has a pretty good process overview. They outline seven different processes there that they think or they want to use in their methodology. And so they have everything from obtaining the data, getting the proper authorization, getting the requests done properly, acquiring it, extracting the important or the relevant data out, analyzing it, and then producing the report, and then kind of overview of the whole process, what worked, what didn't work. And so they go into a little bit more detail into each phase and have a pretty good flow chart. I'm not going to go through them, but this is something if you're interested in figuring out what their processes are and what they recommend of doing, it's pretty neat. And so they have the preparation and extraction phase. They go through the whole flow there of how do you go through the whole process of getting the data the proper way and acquiring it. And then the second is the identification. So we have the data now, but how do we find out what's really important for the case type that we are working on? And then the third one is really the analysis, right? We got the data, we have the information there, but now we need to analyze it to see really what's in there. And so their iterative process is pretty good here into going through all the steps of who, what, where, what, you know, how, and all the other processes to get the right information there. This mic? Yeah. So, kind of a conclusion of the overview. There are really good processes out there or methodologies that have been documented. There are a lot of white papers that, if you really are getting into this area, I would highly recommend reading them. They're very valuable. The integrated digital investigation process, they have a really nice paper out there that outlines the whole methodology that they recommend. There is a digital forensics research workshop that they publish different papers all the time. And they also, you know, talk about those five phases that we mentioned initially. And then the enhanced integrated digital investigation process, they even have a dynamite phase.
I love that. I actually wrote that line. How cool is a methodology that has a dynamite phase?
So anyways, that was kind of the overview, and what we want to get into is what are the problems with digital forensics? Why is it hard? Why are there experts, and people have a hard time picking it up and learning it? And I think the number one answer is that it's an open solution set, right? There's many ways to find the answer that you're looking for, and I talk about a few of those in a little bit, but it's just, there's many, many ways of solving. It's a lot of self-teaching and just sitting to it, right? You can sit there, expert will take 2 hours, and somebody who's just learning it may take 12 hours, whatever. But a lot of it is just sitting there. You're like, I'm going to run this registry. Oh, that didn't really pay out for me. I'm going to, you know, run all the link files. I'm going to do this. I'm going to do that. And then it actually takes a lot of discipline. So kind of one of the differences I see when I see beginners and I see experts is that the experts are really disciplined. They're like, I'm not going to do keyword searches on all these terms because I know it's going to produce, you know, 2 million hits, and I'm not going to cycle through them, right? So it's that patience, that it's that determination, that stay on target. And I just had to say it. And you also have to do a lot of learning while you're sitting there. There's going to be something new, right? So the first time you got a job that had a Vista Shadow, right? And then, you know, you're like shadow copy, and you're like, oh, great, how do I do this? And you're looking up on Sands or trying to talk to Rob Lee or something like that. So you got to learn new things while you go, and you got to be quick, and you already have to have the foundation. So it's not a big time. And kind of where we got into the expert is all of these things improve over time. So the more you do, the easier it is next time. I've already done this registry report, and I know it's not going to give me what I want. And you know, Reg Ripper over Access Data Registry, right? You know, which one is going to do the right thing for me? Should I build my own custom templates? I don't know. It's just, these are things you learn. So the open solution set example I always give, I used to give another one, and then I read to Brian Carrier in 2008, and he actually used this one I liked a lot better. But you arrive in the break room, there's five people drinking coffee, the coffee pot's empty. You know, how do you determine who drank that last cup of coffee? It's an open solution set, right? You got to think there's a hard-grilled veteran detective out there that could bust that case in 5 minutes, and me, right? I don't know, Jack, you know, it might take me 5 hours. But anyway, anybody want to give me an idea of how do I determine who drank the last cup of coffee? Right there. Ask them, okay. Interview, that's in there. All right. So this is my first round. Temperatures, the amount of coffee in each cup, the strength of each coffee, right? It's going to be stronger at the end. You guys want to keep going? I got about 10 of these. This is one of the questions I ask everybody who ever works for me. Like, give me something new. What's that? Okay, they're right. There could be a six cup of coffee out there. Mount of coffee grounds, right? You know, hopefully there's more at the bottom, so the last person might have some more. Obviously, there's interview group, individuals. Yep.
Video.
There you go. Does video exist? Develop a timeline, right? You know, measure the temperature of the cup versus the temperature of the coffee. That was one I got a little while back. That is actually from the Brian Carrier example. He's actually doing it for a different reason about the statefulness of computers. But, yeah, offer reward. I like that one, too. So it's really great. I get some all new ones, and I'd like to add them. I don't have them all listed. I keep a little wall of this example. But it just kind of shows that there's many, many ways of doing it. And how do we get the most optimal? How do I become that grilled detective, right? No, last one, yeah, that one's fine. We were trying to come up with off the wall at some point, I think over a beer, and I was like, we're just going to hold them, right? It doesn't have a good payoff because it might be a really, really long time. But anyway, the point is there a combination that can produce a higher probability answer? You know, what can I do? It's always tough to get like the smoking gun that's 100%, but you know, you get enough data, enough information to draw conclusions and support those conclusions, you're pretty good to go. Be efficient. And this is what experts do, right? So these guys right here in this row, they're all sitting together. They've probably done a ton of these things already and say, this is enough to provide the conclusions that I need. Let me know when we switch. And then this is also another, it's a thought experiment, kind of the same line where I'm saying, this is why we did this and this is why I came up with some of these things. But if we took three different skill levels, let them talk to the requester, ask them any darn question they want to ask them, get a timeline and go do it, what would we really expect if we had an expert, kind of somebody that's been doing it for 2-3 years, and somebody that's pretty new? You know, what are the results going to show? How varied are they going to be? And of course, that's what I'm trying to fix, right? So if we gave them 20 hours and said, oh, you know, if we get unlimited time, you've only got 20 hours to produce a report, you know, are the findings going to be different? You know, is the expert going to knock it out in 2 hours and go drink some beer for the rest or what? And then drop it into 8 hours, because that really happens in real life. I get things and they're like, we need an answer by the end of today. Right? And does that mean I'm going to do, you know, super timeline, which is going to generate for 6-7 hours? No, it doesn't. So anyway, where we fit in, and this is for the analysis phase, we're not really going to focus on what the methodologies do right now. I mean, they do a great job of telling you to go get the data and to grab the data, but when you get to the analysis phase where we put up that DOJ, and they were like who, what, when, where, and artifacts and all that good stuff, how can we do a better job of maximizing our time with the requesters, right? I mean, a lot of places have forms and things like that. It's really hard to have an interaction. I think the biggest thing for me in original digital forensics investigations is getting that right initial contact down, right? They're going to come in there and say, this is what I think I want. And you're going to go in there and say, this is what I can do. But how do I maximize that? How do I really get, like, these are the goals? And how do I come in there with some pre-knowledge of what case types or what exactly they're asking for? So these were kind of our goals and the questions that we had as we went. And can we really achieve consistent results in the field? You know, I think we can get better, but, you know, actually every consistent? No. So here's what we came up with. And again, this methodology is just an overview. Sam's going to get into it a little bit deeper. But we've really set it up so it's part expert system, part process. So when you go in and you're talking to them, we've got a tool that we're working on. We really wanted to have it done before we came here, but it didn't happen. But anyway, it's got case types. And a case type might be compromised machine or intellectual property. And on there, they're going to have common case goals. I mean, these are the things you see all the time. I want to know if this document left, or, you know, I want to know who this person emailed and all those good things. And so you start with that case type, so you can go in there with a little bit of knowledge or have it on hand when they start to tell you what they want. We broke it out into three. The questioner's going to want something. You're going to have common things, and then there's also going to be analyst developed, because during that initial pre-analysis phase, the last thing you really want is, you know, that requester coming, getting your report after all this work and saying, oh, you know what, I forgot to ask you. I want to know if this malware compromised any of my other systems. You know, so that's why, you know, you got it in front of you. It's going to be a common case goal for compromised systems. Do you want to know if there's additional exposures? Once you get that, it's golden, right, to get the agreed upon case goals. You've got to walk away with it. It's got to be solid. It's got to be consistent. It's got to be just completely understood by both sides. Because if you go out and if you're working a case for a lawyer or something like that, and then bam, you give him what they want, and he's like, great, I can't use it, right? You know, I really needed to know if these PDFs ever existed. So if you can't get that, you're in big trouble, and you're going to have to go back, and you're going to have unhappy customers because they're spending a lot of money. So anyway, by developing the required list and the beneficial list, you can provide a case estimate. And that's something I really like, because trying to get better at case estimates is a really, really big deal for me, because you get people, you get these expectations. If you can be as, you know, as close to correct as possible, then, you know, you're not really having people that, like, I thought it was only going to cost $1,000, or, you know, I thought it was only going to take 10 hours and my lawyers are waiting, standing by. So getting into the analysis, I'm going to go through, because Sam's going to go pretty deep in this. You know, determine the methods. And this is kind of where we started getting into that optimal case business, right? We wanted to say, you know, method A, we want to find out how this machine was compromised. What's the best way, right? What's going to take the least amount of time? Just going back to that coffee cup example, you know, what's going to be the best answer in the shortest amount of time? And then for the analysis where we do an index, we're actually estimating the analyst skill with that method and those types of things to actually generate what we call the SPI and put some time limits for reevaluation. So if you think it's going to be a four-hour job and you start getting into six, you know, maybe you need to look at, hey, putting this one on hold and going for something else. That's it. Well, not.
So some of the details, right? We want to develop analysis phase for digital investigation, right? So we want to have a good understanding of what we're trying to accomplish. And then we're going to try to organize, because every case type is not the same, right? Malicious activity case type is different than child pornography or examining a cell phone for malicious activity. So there's all different types of cases. So we need to kind of organize our cases differently and then have different type of goals for each case, because we just cannot use a standard standard questionnaire for all the different case types. And then the other thing is we want to do also at the beginning, as Dave mentioned, implement a time management process. So we know for this type of case, if the hard drive is 80 gig data on it, it has 80 gigs of data, and we need to analyze it for this type of case, then most likely we're going to have this 4 or 5 goals that we have agreed on, and they are going to take us X amount of time. So we want to definitely kind of understand all of that and know what we're looking at. And then part again is the expert system, right? An expert person will just automatically know, okay, I have 120 gig drive, I need to produce these types of results, it's going to take me 5 hours, 10 hours, whatever the time might be. So the goals of the methodology, right? Develop better pre-analysis information. This is like before we even start, we know what we're dealing with, right? And then achieve better time estimation. And then how do we provide that information? So the three components to our methodology are the pre-analysis, analysis, and the structured time management. The pre-analysis, we define in depth what kind of information we want from the requester and how do we get the right questions in there. And then during the analysis is when we sit down and we try to figure out how do we answer those goals that we have agreed with. And then the structured time management kind of fits in both of those phases. Initially, when we develop the case goals, we know how much time we're going to estimate to spend on it, but then during the analysis, we kind of have a measurement of where we spending our time and how much more time do we have left. Can we achieve those 5 goals with the left out time that we have on our plate? So the pre-analysis phase, really, we broke it down into 2 different processes there. First is you meet with the requester. That's the easiest one. You sit down and say, okay, what do you want at the end of the day? What kind of information should I produce? What are you looking for? You know, he says, well, I want you to find out who compromised this machine. But then as the expert, you want to go back and kind of refine those questions and get the information that's going to help you at the end of the day to produce the report that he really wants. And so that's a more iterative process. You have a conversation with the requester and you go through the different questions that he is asking, and you produce or you refine his questions to give you the information that you need. Some bigger forensic companies, they have developed their own questionnaires, and they use those as a standard. They're pretty good because you don't have to meet with the requester. He fills out the answers to the questions that you have there. However, they tend to take a little bit more time. And then sometimes you might not get that personal interaction with the requester and kind of really understand if he is getting the questions that you're asking on that questionnaire. But just different types of questions that you can ask, or you can get it from the requester. Then, so we've got the information from the requester. We know what he kind of wants. Then an expert is going to say, well, okay, this guy has that, but for this type of case, I know that these are common goals that should always be answered, right? So we find out how this machine was compromised. That's what the requester asked us. And then the forensic analyst will say, well, determine what the attacker really did on this machine. I mean, yeah, we know that it got exploited through MSO 640, whatever it is, but really, what did they do after they got into the machine? And then we also can have common goals based on case type. And this is basically what we kind of see the industry usually does, right? For a network break-in, these are the types of logs. This is the type of information. I want firewall logs. I want IDS logs. I want all of this information. That's a standard procedure that you're always going to ask. And then as a forensic analyst that has some experience, they're going to come back and say, yes, this is really what they wanted. This is what the industry says we should do. But really, to solve this case, these are some of the additional goals that I need to include here to provide that information. And then we are gathering all these goals, right? And then we also need to have a process to give us a time for each goal of how do we determine what's the time that's going to be needed to process that goal or to deliver that information. And then this is where we find out the required information and also what's beneficial, right? We must have the image of the system to process the case, right? But it would also be very useful for us to get the logs from the firewall or from the other machine for the other machines on the network. And then what does this give us, really? After we have done this outline, we really have we really know what we're after. We kind of have a schedule or a plan of what are we going to attack now. We have the primary data points, and then we know what our resources and what our time is available, and then we need to start breaking it down in terms of the tools and everything that we're going to use. But this is going to give us the information to where we need to get started. And then I think the determination for the case type, you know, if we have a malicious activity, standard goals, let's say 4.2 methods that we need to use, and then the analysis, the analyst says I'll need about 20% time to, you know, produce this type of case, then we can generate a SPI index that will basically help the analysis know how valuable it is or how much time and effort it's going to take him to produce this goal. And then again, this is what we mentioned at the beginning. It's the expert that does that goes through his head and says, this is what I usually did do for this type of case. This is what I did last week. These are the things if I need to produce the registry report, the web browser history, and these other things. Usually it takes me 5 hours processing time. I'm going to add 2 hour buffer time, and then I should be able to get the report done in 10 hours. And then the case goal estimation time, right? This is very important to be able to produce to the requester at the beginning or after that initial conversation and tell him, okay, I'm going to probably need about 10 to 15 hours because they need an estimate so they know how much you're going to charge them at the end of the day. And so producing the appropriate time estimate is really going to tell them, well, you know, this guy is really good. We asked for all this information, but really we can't afford it. So we'll cut some of the goals out, or no, we're going to add some more goals because we really want more information out of that. And I think the next thing is the analysis.
Yeah, I just want to add on to that. There's that expectation you get right away. I mean, you know, whether it's internal to your organization or what, just setting up that expectation. If they really think you're going to do it in 10 hours and you end up at 20, 25, you know, you're not making friends. You're not, you know, giving them the trust in you. So that, to me, is the big reason for estimation and getting estimation dead on. So now we get to the fun part, right? It's the analysis. This is where you actually get to sit. You know, you've already got your goals, and you've given an estimate of how long it's going to take you to do. So, yeah, we want to achieve the case goals that we've determined and we've agreed upon in the optimal time, right? So we developed an index so we could rate all the different methods of solving that goal. It's just a simple algorithm, and we want to generate the highest probability based on the time. So we actually used a probability. We wanted to use just a different algorithm that was actually used for gambling, you know, about probability and how much of your bankroll you should use. But the SPI is generated based on effectiveness, level of effort, compatibility of your tool sets, whether you have them is a good reason, and then the familiarity with the method, right? So if you've never used RedDripper or any of the registry tools,
You know, we want to know that, because then we can actually help you estimate which one is the best for you. If you've already got experience doing XYZ, yeah, that's going to come out with a little bit higher. The software we've developed actually has it where you get to choose some of these things, and you can add values, and it can actually, you know, dynamically. And you can actually use it in the pre-interview process when you're talking to the requester, you know, when you're working up those goals a little bit. You can actually see those numbers if you so choose. For methods, you know, this is actually in the software. Right now it's in a spreadsheet that, you know, we've almost got ready. We had some problems with Chrome, and I didn't want to just put it on Firefox only. But it's just, this is what we list is for each method. And so what we're hoping to do is when you have a case type like, you know, intellectual property, then we're going to have a whole bunch of methods, right? So if you've got, review usage data, you're going to see super timeline, and you're going to see, you know, registry rippers, and you're going to see link file, and then all kinds of good things like that. And these are the fields that we use. Not too exciting. And the goal of it really is to get the best bang for the buck, right? You know, this is what we think will give you the highest probability of solving that case goal. You might have 10, you might have 2. But we're gonna run it through. And I think I already went a little bit to what we mean by methods. We specifically didn't want to be tool-based, right? We wanted to use generic things, you know, generate web history or generate system usage or whatever. But we just didn't want to get into specific OSs. That's something that you can wait of an SPI, but, that's also where the expert comes in, right? An expert's going to say, this is the right tool for this right job. And it may fit into a category of, you know, web history generators. But, you know, if you're looking at, 60 gigs of web histories, you know, you're not going to use something small, right? So a part of it is that. It is a probability-based. I threw the function up there that we use. I also threw up, you can take it right off the slide and drop it into a spreadsheet if you really want to do it yourself. It's really not too exciting. I wanted to break out machine time and person time, because a lot of times you can have machine time running, and your person time is what takes up is the value when you're doing this. So if you've got something that's 10 hours of machine time and 1 hour of person time, I want that to be weighted higher than the reverse. And of course, we couldn't address everything, right? You know, you may not be willing to buy a forensics toolkit for $5,000 or whatever they charge right now with its Oracle license. But we also didn't know what the expertise was, you know, so I wanted to have some things in there saying, hey, you know, some things may be heavy scripted, and if you don't have that, then, you know, we don't want, SPI can't predict that. We try to be very descriptive in the methods and kind of what this method is and what it does, but then also, types and environments. You know, if you don't have anything to look at, my BlackBerry or my iPhone, then you know, we just couldn't foresee that in this algorithm and listing of what to do. I think the big thing here is really that it's experts have these things already. They already know what tools they have, and they already know what they're missing. If they get a forensics case that's mobile-based, they're going to say, I can't do this. I need to send it somewhere else, or they're willing to go out and buy it. They also understand the failures of methods, right? You know, which ones were good, which ones were bad, which ones missed, how did I miss a deadline, what did I do wrong? And so we're just trying to really take that data and plug it right back in. It's what I do. It's, you know, when I got my teams, I'm like, when they're new, I'm like, break a case down like this, and then go after this and go after this. Because I already knew that, you know, hey, you're going to get better results with the web histories than with pulling the registry, right? Or you're going to do better than going through and scanning all the files and doing your keyword searches, you know, from indexes, building a giant index. So it's kind of, that's what experts do, and it's trying to take some of that back. So there's two factors in the time estimation, right? There's the data size, right? If you get a huge amount of data, you know, I need to be able to account for that in the SPI, because that goes to the machine time in a lot of cases, and hopefully what you get out in the back. But then there's skill level. And like I said, that's the skill level comes into determining what is the right tool for the right job, or knowing the limitations and saying, oh, you know what, this web history doesn't even know about Chrome. You know, why am I going to bother with that? Providing the ability to budget time based on the expected results. It's a good way to go. It's really set up that goal. And then that way, if you go over, by your 20%, you're like, okay, stop. You know, maybe this isn't the right tool, or maybe this isn't the right method that I need to use. And of course, that ties right back into the time management strategy. So you made it past all the dry, is this you? Or is it still me? Okay. You made it past all the methodology, and hopefully so we get a little bit more entertaining here. I wanted to take 3 cases, but it turned out that it just got so big and unwieldy that we couldn't. We just did it with one. The case study that we're doing is one of the intellectual property cases. It's actually a combination of about 2 or 3. You don't have to read that, but that's what you would get in the SPI. You're going to get this thing that says, here's what a case type is, right? Experts here, they already know what intellectual property cases are and what they normally involve and those types of things. In this particular case, the employee left, started a competing business. The hire date and last date, we were given those times. And then they had an assigned workstation. And so we, of course, had to go image that workstation. Give me a time check. So we went to the initial meeting, right? And, of course, in this particular case, this wasn't through my organization. It was through my own digital forensics company. They got there, and they're like, we don't know what to do, right? So, we're sitting there in that initial meeting, and they're just like, what? You know, and we're like, well, did they take your vendor list? Did they do this? Did they do that? And so we actually generated the common case goals, and they were identification of specific documents and parts of documents. So we knew we were going to have some fuzzy hashing in there and system use, and did they connect the USB and copy stuff off and all these good types of things that you normally get. And, wow. That's not cool. Let's Sam do a little magic there. But so these were kind of the agreement of goals, what I walked away with, right? It was, we want to know about the USB. And it was amazing that kind of once they got going, they really came up with a big list of, like, here's all the things we want. And then once we started kind of bringing it down, and it's not a typical. I think typically you're working in an organization. You're working in an organization, and then they kind of know what they want, and they're not completely new to asking for things like this. Cool. So this is what we ended up with in the agreed goals, and we added a few, right? We wanted to extract some instant message logs because right away we saw there was some definitely recovered deleted files. They never even mentioned that, and we performed a memory analysis before we went and shut the machine down. So we got our required information. Again, this is what experts do. They don't even think twice about it. They just, these are all in their head. These are the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5s. The big methodologies that we talked about earlier, they don't really cover a lot of this. They're really focused on getting you the image and getting you the authorizations and the warrants and then going through and finding this stuff and building a report. And so we were really focused on just in this analysis phase, how do we go through this? So anyway, we got our beneficial information. We actually got them to give us a full case background, which was pretty cool. We got all the names, and this is one of the things I like to do, and I'll mention it later too. I love to build dictionaries of all the different words and things that are important to the specific case. Not just like run them, not just throw them into a big giant search list, but actually then go back and prioritize them. So they gave us all the work product names of the processes they do and all these unique, distinct names that were going to help us find things. So for the pre-time, we actually came up with 28.5 hours because they had a lot of goals, and that includes all the processing time and all that good stuff. And so we pulled up, and these were some of the common methods from the SPM. And there's some good ones, and I think later, here we go. We pulled some of these out, and actually these were the SPIs that were generated. So in this case, they are a little bit out of order. It was really extraction of emails for analysis based on the case goals we had, recover deleted files because we just because of the time it took to do it and the value that it had, and then, of course, the fuzzy. And again, if we were just doing it for one case goal, we would probably start with the top method. But when you start getting into multiple case goals and tiering them, then a lot of times you just set things up to run. The hash files is a must-do, right? And so no matter what the SPI is, because they want parts of a document to see where it existed. And sure enough, and I'll get into some results later, but they actually took some of the work product and just took their name off and put new company in and had copies on their workstation that they worked at, the previous employer. So that was fairly interesting. Here was some more for system usage. I love Super Timeline. That wasn't a part of it originally. It's been gaining popularity, and with some of the new tools, they can actually, you don't do anything really. You just plug in your Shift workstation and set up the logged time or time to log, and it actually goes and finds everything it can for the time Super Timeline and puts it together. It's a fairly long process though. So as you can see, some of the SPIs that I could do with the registry analysis and those types of things were going to happen faster, and they were what you wanted to do. Because Super Timeline analysis is mostly, you don't touch it until you actually get to the analyst part. You just let it run for 5 hours, and then you look at the results for the time you care about. That was pretty good. So again, if you're an expert, these things all come naturally to you. You know the case better than I do, so you're going to say, oh, I know I exactly want this. I'm not going to even bother with this PI. But it's getting that knowledge back, right? How do you help out the – how do you mentor somebody else? It's this kind of thing that can help you. Because you can say, as a mentor, you can say, here's exactly what you should do, but it's hard to say here's why, right? You can break it down and say, this tool is better than this tool in this particular job that does this particular thing, and here's what they're licensed for, and here's what we don't have a license for. So those types of things. So here's where it gets hopefully a little fun. Here's what we found. We found, obviously, identified documents. Those were easy enough to find. We had lots of link files that actually led to them taking documents, putting them on their USB drives, and then looking at them. So it was pretty easy to put all this whole thing together. There was a hash match to the zip file for the name needed, and it was actually the name of the new competitor.zip. So we found it in a variety of ways, but when we broke out all the zip files and looked for the specific files they really, really cared about, those vendor lists and those customer lists, we found that. We did a lot of fuzzy hashing. It was something that we just ran in the background, and then we didn't have too many false positives. And it led us to directories of the new company's name where they really just took out like entire contracts and just swiped out their old name. So they weren't even going to pay a lawyer to build a new contract for for contracting services. So it was kind of nutty. And the extracted and processed mail was really interesting. I'm not going to go through it all, but I think we're doing good on time, right? There was a ton of IMs. It was amazing what this guy was actually doing. Let's see, offer sent to FedEx last minute. So we had the whole, when they got, asked to join this new company. It was actually, they were partnering with somebody else to start the new company. The exit strategy, there was a how-to, like, here's what you should say when you leave. and here's the best way of telling them that you're going to a competing company and that you're hopefully, going to take everything with you. So it was also a lot of pros and cons. There was a great conversation between the significant other. We're like, I don't know, maybe you shouldn't do this. This person's really been good to you. So it was pretty amazing. And it all happened pretty fast. We actually came in a little bit under the 28.5 because some of it was just so simple to find. I mean, you got to love somebody that just puts it out there for you. But this is one of the things I do. I'm really big on dictionaries, where you can take all the different names and the different part cases that you see, just write it down as you go, and then you can prioritize them. So as the case starts to develop and you see where the important information is and what is important about the case, I guess is the biggest way of saying it. What's the real goal of the case? You can start, then using those specific keywords to help you dig it down. The last thing I hate to see in the world is where you just got somebody sitting in front of the screen, access data, X-ways, in case, whatever, and they're just looking around. They're going through the little browser, and they're looking at files, and they're like, let me just scan the web history. No, don't just scan, right? You want to develop the web history, get your timelines, and look specifically what you're looking for. I think there's a talk right behind me called Sniper Forensics, and it's kind of that's what we're going after, too. We just don't want you looking around and paying attention to this, or, hey, you know what? I found this cool word. I'm gonna search for it now. So it's really just write down that cool word, and then you can prioritize it to stuff better. Anyway, registry analysis usually has a great SPI, so of course we did that, and we found tons of supporting data for all the accessing files and changing files. Once we had identified the files with kind of all the other methods that we used, we were then able to generate it completely. Super timeline, I know it didn't exist at the time, but we know it would have definitely made the cut for getting processed, and then we actually had solid timelines for these events and kind of the follow-up. We analyzed the web history. That was fun. Always good stuff to do. There was a little porn on the work site, so you got to love that. And definitely wasn't little people porn, but it was great. It blows me away that people are going to sit on their workstations in their organizations and look at porn during the day. We see what time it is. You've got a system clock. So I can't get over it. I'm always amazed that just the amount of people that will choose to look at porn in the workplace. Great conversations, trashing. So we had some great IMs. That was one of the ones that we put in there because we knew that there was some instant messaging that was going on with the competitor. And then, of course, there was lots of discussions and who to take with them, right? They're going to start their new big company. Who are they going to take? So we met all the goals. We had defendable data and conclusions. It was pretty straightforward. This is probably the easiest case in the world. that we were able to get in a really good time. We actually came under. We rechecked our primary findings with multiple tools. It's something I believe in. There's been so many times where, you know, I've run a tool and I got a date, say an MFT date or something like that, and it turned out to be in the wrong order, right? The tool had a problem. And you might be familiar with it, but, you know, that's why you check it. You know, you take the sleuth kit or, you know, autopsy or x-rays or whatever you want to do that's in a different thing. Just validate your finals, right? So here were my personal conclusions from the case. This guy really does fill out his ID-10-team forms in triplicate. I mean, it was amazing, right? It's idiot. But it was just amazing that there was just so much information about what he was going to do and how he was going to sell it and who he was going to sell it to and how he was going to take these contracts. And I'm surprised they just didn't walk by and actually catch him. But he doesn't even own a home PC because that's where that stuff should have been. And, of course, Eraser and CC Cleaner and TrueCrypt and all those good things. So that was interesting, right? I think I covered all of that. That was just interesting. But a big thing I'm also, that isn't a part of SPM, is just judging your performance, right? So feedback can be shaky, because if you didn't find exactly what they wanted, they're gonna be like, yeah, well, you know, it would have been great if you did this or if you did that. So it's hard to actually take that feedback and have it be meaningful on what you do. And so I actually did try to weight some of the metrics that I use and I push on my teams. The number of follow-up questions. If you did a good job in the pre-analysis phase, you're not going to get all these follow-up questions. They're not going to say, oh, great, how about where did this file go after it got sent to our mail system, right? You know, you could have looked at the SMTP header for whatever when they wrote replied back or whatever, but you didn't, right? Because they didn't ask that and you didn't know you'd go looking for it. So it's kind of getting those agreed-upon goals. That's a good metric for it. The number of goals that they requested versus what you were able to draw out of them, right? So as you get better at interacting with the client, if it's a form, you know, you're set on it. But when you're talking to that person, either from your organization or from an external party, you know, they're like, I want this. And then how many goals can you draw that are more specific of things they really want? And so that's a great metric, I think. The amount of time, estimated versus total. As you get better, experts are really good at making that estimated time equal very close to that total time, barring something crazy. And then, of course, the total predicted value versus actual value, right? So it's, here's what I think I'm going to be able to get for you, which is always a dangerous statement when you're talking to somebody with a forensics investigation. But it's, you know, it kind of comes out there like, what do you think they're going to get? And they're really trying to draw it out of you. So it's actually what you were able to kind of predict versus what was going to happen versus what you actually gave the requester. And, of course, I really count this, and this one's important to me. It's a number of wrong turns. And I am known for making mistakes, learning from them, and then, you know, hopefully getting better. I really believe in it. Look where you make a mistake. Focus on it. Say, hey, I'm not going to make that mistake again, you know. So those are kind of my big judging your performance metrics. How are we doing on time? Are we way under? Okay. So anyway, even if you don't fully invest in this methodology, right, and you get something good out of it, just really, really focus on defining your case goals better. You know, even if it's just your boss comes down and says, hey, I want this, 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 he can be your requester, right? So you can do a better job of like, hey, tell me what you really want, or let me help you develop that, right? You don't have to use our tool or our what we're trying to plug in as far as estimation of time and how long it'll take you to do what. But just make that your primary goal. You're going to find the stuff, you know, using your tools, good or bad, but or you may or you may not, I should say. But I think really getting that better definition and just agreed upon is the way to go. And then improve familiarity with your common goals. You know, you work at a place, you've got a lot of compromised machines. You know, say you're doing graphics, right? You're porn on the workplace, and they want you to develop, you know, what porn? Was this person looking at porn? And were they looking at it at this time? Because that's when the complaint came in. But you'll say things like, okay, how many? Because they usually care. And then they usually care about a history, right? Is this person just looking at porn once? Or they've been looking at porn like 4 hours a day for the last 20 years. So that's the kind of stuff those departments are going to want to hear. And if you're not thinking about that, if you haven't already done a ton of cases where, for whatever reason, you're doing investigations, whether they're looking at who's going where on the firewall or what, those are the kind of things that you'll want to say to them. So being familiar with what types of cases you do and how they normally follow out. If you're in a group and you're the new guy, you know, ask, does this exist already? You know, what are the questions that we normally ask when we go through this? You may get hand-holding for your first couple. You may not. I definitely believe in mentally organizing methods with the best bang for the buck mentality, which is kind of the whole Smith-Petresky methodology and index. But then in developing your internal time management. So even if you don't, you know, use any of the, I think, good stuff that we have, that's what the value really is. We're going to do questions in 113. Thanks to a couple guys that helped us out. There's our contact information. Kyle Davis, Mickey Lasky, Scott Molden, yay, yay. And then I'm always going to leave on a few extra thoughts. And I guess we can take some questions if we got a little bit of time. But like I said, I like building those dictionary of account names, email addresses, all the stuff you think is important. Don't break off your primary task and go looking for it. Write it down, and then it can become meaningful later. You might write down an email address and find that you never had a reason to go look for it, right? And you might have, if you weren't disciplined, to push it off to the side, spend 20 minutes going through and looking at false positives and all that good stuff. It's always kind of crazy to sit there and just search for single words and then get a result and search for single words, my opinion. Keep the little case goals handy, right? It's great for actually making sure you're on my mental checklist. And then, of course, I actually print them out and I scribble on them as I go. And then it helps prevent case overkill, which you might find yourself in sometimes where, you know, you've already drawn conclusions, you can back up your facts, but you just keep going. You're like, oh, I also found this email, and I found this email, and how many pieces of, you know, other than getting a number of how many graphic pornography images were on this machine, the total number, you know, you don't need to look at them all, right? You don't, it may be fun, but you don't need to. And then, of course, a couple of cases, we had reporting deadlines. And that was the kind of thing where it's experts have to have their testimony in by this point. And so I include raw data because what's really funny is they tend to draw that line and then do depositions after experts turn in their things. So then they'll find something in the deposition that's this person says that they emailed this. And if you didn't actually have it in your raw data, you can't because your report's in and then you can't create a new report after the deadline. So I tend to put some raw data in there and just it's ignored by everybody. But it can be used, you know, after the report. So that's just a little lesson I've learned. And that's it. Yeah.